ANZ Voices welcomes you to the Business of Bluntstock podcast with Tim Rowe and Charmaine Bukovec.
Welcome to episode 8 of the Business of Bluntstock podcast. They're not as frequent as we planned, so we've over-promised and under-delivered, but we hope the content makes up for that. This week, we're thrilled that James Cummings, obviously the Godolphin Australia head trainer, joined us. Thorough chat, extensive chat through his runners and thoughts on life as Godolphin, you know, in the hot seat at Godolphin. And also got a new sidekick in Justin Darcy's joined me as well. Charmaine Bukovec, overseas gallivanting around Europe, Royal Ascot, Arcana, Tats, probably the Greek Islands. I'm not quite sure, but she's currently overseas. So this is episode 8 of the Business of Bloodstock podcast, proudly brought to you by Jimmy Unwaller's Avesta Bloodstock. At ANZ Bloodstock News, Business of Bloodstock podcast, we're thrilled to have James Cummings on the line. Thanks, James, for joining us.
Thanks, Tim. Thanks for having me.
No worries. I thought we'd start, obviously, heading into the new season next week at the time of recording, and obviously with our audience and in generally the two-year-olds of great interest. And I guess Godolphin and Darley brought out a lot of very well-credentialed shuttlers and, you know, retirees off the track from Godolphin Australia. So you're no better man placed than you to give us some insight into some of those rising two-year-olds and your expectations. I guess Blue Point's a good starting point. He's had 20 winners in the Northern Hemisphere. He's flying. You'd have a few in the stable, James?
Well, I've had a few in the stable, and I've, you know, can't help but hear from around the traps other stables and their impressions of them. But if you ask me my impression of them, it's very, very good. There's rarely a rider that doesn't come off a Blue Point without giving me extremely positive feedback. And we're a little bit swayed also by what happens ahead of the ball in Europe, and the start that he's had in the European two-year-old season has been very impressive. So there's a lot to look forward to from the perspective of the Blue Point progeny that we've got turning two next season. They're very, very likable.
What that obviously always doesn't always translate. Certain stallions work in one hemisphere and not the other, and there's few exceptions like Exceed and Excel and so forth. But what do you like about their mental capabilities, physical? Or do you think they'll be sort of reasonably early, or a bit hard to tell?
Well. Number one, they look like absolute bullets, and it can't be terribly surprising for us considering he was such a strong sprinter. That purple patch of form he had, where he put in something like 5 wins in a row, was like, you know, so impressive, and to go with it, they are showing all the qualities of young stock that are forward and precocious. They're in the hands of the riders, getting good feedback regularly. They're handling everything that my system's prepared to throw at them at this stage, and that is to me a cornerstone of their potential success as two-year-olds.
Tudun Hot's another shuttler. Sorry there, Justin. Yeah, Tudun Hot's another shuttler, and he sold very well at the sales, I think up to $1 million, and one in New Zealand sold for about 750. What's your impressions of the few you've had through there of his rising two-year-olds?
Yeah, he's a very interesting young sire, and the progeny that we've had through have had had sort of quite a lot of potential written all over them. I wouldn't be surprised if I had to wait a little longer with them sort of from one horse to the next. Don't get me wrong, I think we'll get a few 2-year-old runners out of out of the small team of two darn hot progeny that we've got through the stable so far. But I just think if I take a little bit longer with them, I think my horses will be better off. And yet they've grown well, they've developed the right way. They're working with us. And I just think that's probably an interesting observation that's occurred to us so far.
We're about to see the two-year-olds from one of the boys you used to train, Microphone. What are your impressions on his first crop? Obviously, he was a two-year-old Group 1 winner and a stakes-winning three-year-old. So do they look like they're going to go early, or are they sort of trending more towards that three- and four-year-old season?
I would expect them to go quite early. I think that's, I think there should be no doubting that. I liked what I saw from them at the yearling sales at the Magic Millions, and we actually missed out on one that we really quite liked. All three of these sides that you've asked me about so far, if the market is at least the first port of call by of what you might be guided by, the market's been bullish about all three of them, and that's a really reliable sign. As for my microphones, yes, love the way they've been moving. They're heading in the correct direction. And look, I just reckon if I had 20 of them, I'd be able to tell you a lot more, but I just have only a small number, and we'll support him every year, and we will give him every opportunity like everyone will. And I'd love to have an up and running microphone ready to go nice and early. So there's a few we've got, there's a few we've got earmarked, but it's just a matter of whether or not they're going to hit the ground running and make it that early, because it is such a competitive environment when you consider the strength of the two-year-old size that are on the Australian sire roster.
Obviously, Godolphin's such a powerhouse operation, both from a breeding and racing aspect. In terms of their younger stock, are you going to the farm to inspect the weanlings and yearlings that you would like in your stable, or is that sort of done by someone else?
So we have really quite impressive managers of the various properties where our yearlings are raised, where the mares are foaled down, the yearlings are raised. So one is at Woodlands in the Hunter Valley, and the other is at Northwood Park in Seymour in Victoria. And it's a long way of answering your question, but when I kicked off with Godolphin, I really made it my intention to go and have a look at those yearlings the first few years with Jason Walsh, who travels from Sydney to have a look at those young horses very, very regularly. Like, Jason's looking at those horses numerous times before they even come to the racing stable, before they're even broken in. And the first thing that I could identify is that what Jason can see is something that I can rely on a great deal. And hearing the feedback from the very capable farm managers in those two operations and their assistants is also very reliable material. And apart from that, Vin Cox will have a look at them. We'll get members of the Bloodstock team internationally that will fly over before carnivals. They'll go through those yearlings, and the veterinary teams will go through those yearlings. So there's no shortage of eyeballs that have been on those horses, because of that, there's a lot of information that I can sift through sight unseen of the actual horses that I can rely on. In the first few years, I really did enjoy doing that, and I got to know a lot of the guys on the farm, and so now I know how their systems operate. I know them very well, and yet, from about the moment where I was not allowed to go in and out of the stable and onto a farm during COVID, I haven't really picked back up that habit. But I'm at the stage now also where I'm training, the fourth or the fifth foal from that mare that I've already trained, so I know that pedigree well, or I might be training the first foal or the second foal, the mare I trained in 2017. So I might have already trained the half relations, or I might have already trained the mare. And that gives me great advantage to have a knowledge of that horse's pedigree, and so that gives not only me but also my team more confidence about what we might expect to be unfolding with that horse, and that's underlined by a pretty, you know, as good a team as you could hope for, that are following the progress of those young horses in the early stages of their development.
Just feeding off that answer, James, obviously at sales yearlings or sales horses, they're x-rayed and vetted, and you know the buyer's got a lot of information in front of them. When those homebreds get to your stable, have they all been x-rayed or things like that, or do you just treat them as a horse and sort of almost oblivious to any potential minor or potential x-ray faults, is for want of a bit of a better word?
Well, it's interesting. I wouldn't say that they're all x-rayed, and I wouldn't say, nor are we oblivious to any faults. So the system relies on regular feedback, constant supervision, and the observation of those horses in their early development. A percentage of them are x-rayed, and a percentage of them may have needed some grease and oil changes along the way, but by and large, they've had a natural upbringing. They've had to do it. They've had to do it a bit tough early, appropriately. Very well looked after by beautiful big paddocks. But they're not hot housed, and there's they're well grown individuals. So when they arrive to us, whilst they might not have been x-rayed and been through a sales complex, they have still done preparations where they've been well handled, and they should be, not only well received by the breakers, but ready to slot into a stable and commence training under my system.
You've obviously already had a few stallions that you've trained go to stud, as we just touched on. Microphone and Bivouac there, you know, some very high profile horses, but none more so than Animo going to stud this year, which obviously his racetrack career from 2 to 4 was quite phenomenal. He would be the best horse you've laid hands on, would he? Or, certainly from a stud perspective, he very exciting.
He is incredibly exciting, and, there are not many opportunities where breeders are able to have a crack at a retiring colt that has won 9 Group Ones and 6 Group Ones in his most recent season. So that's an exciting time for everyone who wishes to be involved with Animo, from the many breeders in this country and internationally, and it's even exciting as that process unfolds, and when the first weanlings start getting to the sale, and the yearlings and trainers start entering trainer stables. So there's all of that to look forward to. But this one goes without saying, doesn't it? He won 9 Group Ones for Godolphin, and he won the jewel and the crown. He won the Cox Plate, so for what he promised as a young horse, he well and truly delivered and made it all the way to the top.
Obviously, as you mentioned, he's a Australian champion racehorse, and we sort of have to ask it as well. But after watching the Queen Anne unfold at Royal Ascot, are there any regrets about not travelling the horse over, or are you pretty content with the decision made to send him to stud?
Well, look. Broadly, the truth is that we have so many decisions that we have to make throughout the season, and it is not really very rewarding to sit back and decide which of the decisions that we made that didn't go our way that might, that we will regret and spend and waste time regretting. So once we make a decision as a group, we've got to live by it, move on, and get on to the next. As for the Queen Anne this year, it goes without saying that as the trainer of the horse, I have no doubt that Animo would have gone over there, having watched the race, he would be able to sit beautifully. James McDonald would have had him camped just a couple of lengths, a few lengths from the lead. Pace was looking like it was quite honest, and he would have just been cruising up to them. Had he had he been in for the fight, you know, I can't question my horse. I think he'd have finished first or second. I really think he would have been prepared to run that well. But, you know, there was a decision to make. And how could you argue against the commercial realities of how much was there for us to be gaining by taking him there? Lots of colts end up being retired as tired horses off the track. Animo certainly won't be in that list. He was one horse who we braved with the decision to keep him in training as a four-year-old. He won 7 out of 9 races. He won 6 more Group 1, and he's one of the most anticipated young sires hitting the stay-in roster for a long, long time, and perhaps in as, you know, for as long as I can remember, maybe even going back to as far back as so you think, and for our team, that is an incredibly exciting position to be in. It's a great compliment to the effort that my entire team made in caring for the horse and in managing his racing career, and our entire operation for breeding the horse, developing the horse, you know, coming to our homegrown system to such heights, you know, to such a claim. So, you know, that's the commercial decision that you realistically can't argue with from that perspective. And we've safely got the horse at stud, ready to go and ready to fire in his new sound career.
Animo cast a pretty big shadow there stud wise, but you've also had Paul Ailey retire to stud this year, and he was a good, honest, very good sprinter, won the Winterbottom in Perth last year. What can you tell us about him?
Look, we've had an amazing season, and yet the win of Paul Ailey in that Winterbottom was right up there with one of the more exciting finishes of any race we've been involved in, let alone just the Group Ones or just the 11 Group Ones that we were able to enjoy, or just the 56 stakes races, or the number of metropolitan wins or wins anywhere in the country. I mean, that was as exciting as it gets. And for the horse to finish off in devastating style, to pick up the Perth horses and win that race so well, was a massive compliment to Paul Ailey. But it did reflect the impressive sprinting career that he'd already established over here in the East. I really loved the way the horse won the Rosebud when he was first up as a three-year-old in there at Randwick. Like the horse carried 59 kilos. You gave in the Congo 6 kilos and yet still beat the horse. Giving 3 kilos away to Remark, who at the time was the next big thing coming back after just missing out on gaining a start and a slipper. And so many kilos above weight for age, Paul Ailey just showed such sustained speed, impressive turn of foot, put the race away, won by over 2 lengths, like drawing away, you know, like that. He just kept improving from one prep to the next. And there's a lot to be said for, you know, there's a lot to be said for a colt who's winning his first 2 starts pre-Christmas, but yet he's still improving as a spring 3-year-old. He's still improving again as an autumn 3-year-old, and, you know, tackling top horses, and he's kicked the goal with, you know, a few weight for age wins as an older horse, a Scalacci victory, and a Winterbottom. It's an excellent CV, and he's a very, very interesting option for a horse at that level, for the type of mare that you're looking in that arena.
In terms of, you know, your rising 3-year-olds, obviously you've got an army of horses coming through: Barber, Cylinder, Cornish. I'd love the trial of the other day. Have you got any Group 1 goals for these horses? And, you know, would you be able to tell us a little bit about what you thought of their trials, especially the other day?
Yeah, look, we took them over there to Hawkesbury, and we were happy with the gallops of those horses. We weren't there to get too carried away, but these are some very promising young horses that are going to be turning three next month, and we have starting points that are that we're feeling our way with for them at the moment. We haven't necessarily locked in any Group One targets for them, but there are some big targets there that you can't ignore. There's the Golden Rose coming up in September. Then before the end of September, the Epsom Day will roll around on that final weekend, and we'll be looking at races like the Flight Stakes, hopefully for a filly here or there, and the Spring Carnival really unfolds from there. But we haven't looked at anything, and we'd like to know just how much they're improving as we get through the early stages of their preparations. But I can say the early signs are good, and we're quite pleased with how some of our good sprinting horses have come back. We've got some horses with middle distance aspirations and some horses with interesting pedigrees there. Like you asked me about Zardozi. Well, there's a filly with an interesting pedigree. She's by Kingman out of a Dubawi mare. She's got a nice and deep stain pedigree on the dam side. So, we might be capable of having her in a VRC Oaks, and so we're conscious of those races, but those horses still need to improve between now and then to be at that level.
One of those rising three-year-olds, Tom Kitten, of course, by Harry Angel. Obviously, we touched on the first season size earlier, but Harry Angel's made a great start. I think the Daly Noms team haven't had to. They should hand back the commission. I'd say they haven't had to do much selling of that stallion this year. You're confident those horses will train on, and there may even be some we haven't seen yet.
You're quite right. He's had an amazing start, Harry Angel, and he's underlined his value with his fee set. He's a very popular horse, and isn't it interesting that there's a Northern Hemisphere Group One horse who was very much so in the mould of a top sprinter, and they're succeeding here already. So it has been a pretty good recipe, and we hopefully we can continue to take advantage of that. Tom Kitten is actually a horse I don't think I'll be setting for a sprinting top sprinting race though. I quite like the idea of that horse being set for some middle distance targets. The Spring Champion Stakes in October would be a really good race for Tom Kitten if he could take it to the next level after winning the Dulcifer as an autumn 2 year old. But I really like the way he continued to improve every race start as a younger horse. He's enjoyed the benefits of a nice break, and there's a lot of scope about that horse. So whilst he's by a sharp young stallion, Harry Angel, it might give his sire, Harry Angel, the opportunity to prove how versatile he is by siring a horse like Tom Kitten, who could get up over a little bit more ground than just 6 furlongs.
A question without notice here. Obviously, with the moving of the Spring Champion sort of pretty close to the Toro Derby, which you've won before, could you foresee horses backing up from the Spring Champion heading down to Victoria Derby a week later,
I think it's interesting, and the thing about the Spring Champion Stakes is that it hasn't just been moved; it's also had a prize money injection and gone to $2 million. And one thing that can tend to happen anywhere in the world is that if you continue to support races with big prize money, then that's the type of quality that you will eventually end up getting. You can find a handful of examples where that might be proven wrong in the short to medium term. But as a rule, it holds pretty true. And I have been quite impressed with the Spring Champion Stakes quality of the field recently. you'd have seen Sharp and Smart back up from the Spring Champion Stakes to run a place in the VIC Derby. He started favourite last spring. The winner of the race who came along at a bigger price came and beat him, but the winner of the race came out of the Spring Champion Stakes, having finished many lengths behind him at 2,000 metres the week before. And the third filly from the race backed up and won the VIC Oaks. She's extreme. So there's to answer your question, yes, I could foresee that. It wouldn't surprise me. It has been a real feature of Australian racing history. The tough colonial Aussie horses that are capable of running a couple of times within the 7-day backup. And the placement of the Spring Champion Stakes where it is very much so along those lines.
James, when you were first appointed to get off, and I remember calling you up and you sort of expressed part of the appeal of the job, which is high pressure role, as we know, was the international opportunities that could open up for you. And you still sort of, could you foresee the Australian arm sort of travelling more horses to maybe Dubai, even obviously I didn't come off this year, but, you know, the UK and even potentially the US, there's Breeders' Cups and things like that. Is that something in the future you could look at?
Well, we will keep looking at that, and there's no shortage of enthusiasm from my team from wanting to travel horses. That's for sure, and that's demonstrated by our involvement in the Queensland Winter Carnival every year. Our involvement in the South Australian Carnival in Adelaide. We've won our first Group 1 in WA this season, Sheikh Mohammed's first ever Group 1 in WA. And whilst we haven't quite made it to Dubai or the Royal Ascot or anywhere offshore just yet, not through a shortage of nominating, we've certainly nominated plenty, and we're keen to do so. But it is true that we'd rather take horses that were absolutely flying and in their best form when we do that, and we are taking into account the commercial impacts of travelling a horse, particularly if we're talking about travelling young stallions, and the representation of His Highness Sheikh Mohammed in those races, and what other horses in the blue colours that might be picking up those same targets. So those things are relevant. But the short answer is there's no shortage of enthusiasm for doing so. And we still have international targets anywhere, just as much as we sort of continue to maintain our enthusiasm for travelling to all areas of Australia to compete in stakes races.
Now, you're only 35. Obviously, you're in charge of a massive operation. You're raising a young family. How do you cope with that training pressure, and on top of that, in such a short career and such well-established career, what would you say has been your shining light moment thus far?
Well, I think that the advantage that I've got in establishing a really good team since I've been here, with the help of existing team members and new people that have come with me and new people that have joined along the way, has been that we do approach it with a very good team atmosphere, and everyone plays their role. We have been able to enjoy plenty of good wins together. We put up with the good and the bad, but we also there to sort of play to everyone's strengths too. And I think that's a cornerstone of our success as a team in recent years. As far as having a young family goes, the good thing about being a horse trainer is that you might miss the school drop-off, because I am at track work very early in the morning. But the advantage is that I never have to miss a dinner at night with them. I'm always at home at home with the family. I'm not late at night in the office. I'm punching out work till 10 o'clock at night. I'm capable of keeping those hours with the kids. I love to pick up the kids from time to time from school and be involved in their schools and, you know, have good relationships and friendships with other school parents to be involved in their lives too. And it's very important to remain fresh and to remain enthusiastic. So we make the effort to have holidays as families, and when the kids are having a break from school, we'll go somewhere with them, even if it's just up in the bush, just to spend a few days in the country. We spend time together, and that's something that I've always maintained, and I've been able to continue to maintain that with the support of an outstanding team here at Godolphin.
Yes, one of the advantages I imagine of training a big team of horses is you get to experience a lot of different things that can go wrong or right, or just things you're exposed to. Is the way you trained then from, you know, when you were training before Godolphin and you probably had, what, maybe 50 or 60 horse in work, has the way you trained changed? Obviously, you probably have to delegate a bit more. Has that changed or adapted?
Well, I have adapted and evolved as I've trained for more years. But what, you know, I was also exposed pretty quickly, like extremely quickly, and at a young age to a lot of horses straight off the bat. So, in a way, you know, you might say that when I was in my 20s and I was already under the pump to tackle the difficulties of being a foreman for Bart when he was, you know, experiencing ill health and be his eyes and ears as an early 20-year-old, to taking the next step of going into partnership with him and as a mid 20-year-old, and then, you know, and at the time, you know, we're talking about having 65 horses in training. Not that much of a leap then to have, you know, 100 horses on the books then as a late 20-year-old to now 10 years later, or so many years later, have 250 horses on the books with Godolphin. You know, it's been something that has therefore evolved. Probably it feels to me at the right time of my life each moment that it's come along. And so from that perspective, it's really been quite smooth.
We spoke a little bit before about Jason Walsh and Vin Cox. In terms of your weekly meetings when planning out horses, races, whether that be for group ones or just simply maidens, does the final call rest with you or does it rest with the boys?
Yeah, it's interesting you know about these weekly meetings. They've become quite famous somehow. look, Vin and I have always agreed that communicating is so important, even if what we're saying to each other and what we're communicating about might seem straightforward. The habit of keeping in touch and the habit of knowing where we're both at on things is extremely important, and the absence of it would be a bad outcome. As for the meetings that we do have about our race horses and about generally other things that might be happening and going on, you know, we have them so regularly that they are they're on one hand quite conversational, but I have now got to the point where, as we've all always had great respect for each other, we're just hearing about the feedback from seeing these horses and experiencing these horses at the races, and we've all, you know, we're all watching them, we're hearing about that each and every week now, so we begin to know the horses. And they're hearing from my impression how they're pulled up. They hear from me what I planned for them, and I propose everything that we've got in store for them in the future. You know, it's really a matter for them to remain informed, and it's not about who has the final call. It's just about everybody getting the opportunity to be on the same page and moving on. So, you know, it's not about being in conflict or about who gets the final decision. It's just about everybody being engaged and coming along for the journey. And these horses finding their, you know, they're finding their right races and they're finding their right path. And we ultimately settle on a decision as a team.
I guess you're only young, still 35, and you know you got a, you know, as I said, well entrenched there at Godolphin. And could you see other in the future perhaps becoming a public trainer again, or have you got ambitions to train overseas, Hong Kong, or I don't know, Europe? You know, is there other things on the radar for James Cummings down the track?
Well, what I'd say is at the moment I'm very settled, and I have no intention of upending any of that. But you know, there's always a little part of you where there might be opportunities here or there that no one's got their head stuck in so far in the sand that they wouldn't be, you know, open to different things. But we're very settled, and we're all having a great time. We're very fortunate to have beautiful horses come in our stable every year. I'd say, you know, realistically, when, you know, would you change anything? Well, when horse trainers arrive at yards, wherever they are in the world, you know, those horse trainers gradually, whether they do it overnight or whether they take their time, they make their changes at that time, and they're the big changes for the, you know, for that stable ahead in the direction that those trainers want to go. And so I've been able to get through that period of time, that state of flux for being the new trainer at Godolphin, where sort of really felt like all the winners you'd already trained, you're sort of back to zero, and it was all about what you might do with the horses in the blue colours more than anything. But we've moved on from that time. Now those changes have been made, and now we just make subtle adjustments here and there, and we can enjoy training these really beautiful horses, these promising horses we've got sort of coming through the barns every season, and we can look forward to enjoying the success if we're lucky enough to get to have a bit of fortune go our way when the big moments come around, and this Spring Carnival will come out will be no different. It'll be like every other year in that respect.
Conscious of your time, James. Just normally when we do these interviews, just a fast five, we call it, just five simple questions and whatever first comes to mind in the answers, and that'll wrap it up. So I'll start, Justin. Okay. AFL or NRL?
NRL.
And your favourite food?
Pasta.
And I know off air you mentioned skiing, but holiday destination recommendation?
Skiing would be a winner.
Have you got a favourite golf course around the world at all, or any that you'd recommend to any listeners out there?
That I've played or that I haven't played?
Whichever one, whatever.
Okay, Pebble Beach and Augusta National.
And are you an AM or FM radio listener?
AM.
Thanks very much, James. We really appreciate your time, taking a busy, you know, important time in the season for Godolphin, and yeah, really appreciate your insight.
Thanks, guys. No worries.